Hey, welcome. This is the Marketing in the Raw podcast, and I am your host, Adam Helway. This is the place where we try to expand how you define the practice of marketing and your vision of where it's headed, especially in a digitally connected world. If you've driven a car any time in the last 10 years, you've probably used a GPS to get someplace. Super, super convenient, right? I don't know about you, but I remember back in the day, and I say back in the day, I'm not that old, but we had maps, and just trying to find your directions with a map, let alone anticipate the potential where there may be traffic or an accident or some other obstacle on the road, that was darn near impossible. But with a GPS, it's incredible. And even more so with the GPS apps directly on your phone. One of my favorite things to do with the apps on my phone is to plan out my drive ahead of time. If you're using anything from Waze to Apple Maps or even Google, all of them have historical data that lets them know if I want to go to this destination from where I am at this time of day, this is roughly how long it's going to take me to get there based on a lot of historical data. Now, with that data, I can decide when I need to get up, when we need to leave, what time I need to get the kid in the car, all of those things to roughly give me an idea of how I can get to my destination on time. Well, as marketers, wouldn't it be cool if we could use some of the vast amounts of data that's out there, both from third parties and even our own historical data, to better understand how things may perform moving forward, to understand where we should put our money, to understand when we should have a particular campaign ready and locked and loaded to launch, or our content created, written, designed, and ready to go. Well, that's where our topic for this week comes in. I'm going to talk with Katie Robert, the CEO and co-founder of Trust Insights, about predictive analytics. Katie is a whiz at analytics, and she takes a dive into the topic of predictive analytics. What is it? What types of companies is this going to be beneficial for? Where to get started? And also, in a world where things are so unpredictable right now, is predictive analytics something that could be helpful towards reducing some of that uncertainty that we're all feeling? This is definitely one of my favorite conversations I've had in a while. And stick around to the end to see my little gotcha question that I sprung on Katie just as we ended the interview. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. Here is Katie Robert. Katie, good afternoon to you. It's still good morning to me. I'm over here in California. You are where again?
I'm on the East Coast. I'm just outside of Boston proper, in a tiny little town with lots of woods surrounding me.
Very cool. And I was just talking with you a little bit before the podcast about how I was mispronouncing your last name. And in fact, I had to just change how I wrote it in my notes to make sure that I said it correctly. Some people may say it's Katie Robert, but it's not Katie Robert. It is
Katie Robert. And so, you know, it's funny because if I say Robert, nobody knows how to spell it. So when I'm like calling up for like appointments or something, I say it's Robert with two B's, but it is pronounced Robert or Robert, depending on what part of the family you're asking.
Like Steve Colbert, right?
Exactly.
So as we start here, I mean, many of the listeners may be paying attention to the title of this podcast because we're going to talk about predictive analytics, which you're an expert in, but you have a background in PR. So I want to sort of frame this a little bit because I think that there can often be this divide between people's perception of what sort of the analytics and technology side of things are and then maybe the marketing and communication side of things. Can you share a little bit about your experience on the PR side?
Yeah, absolutely. So I personally, I wasn't in PR for too long, but the couple of years that I did work at a PR agency, I learned a lot around how PR professionals plan out the types of activities and campaigns and pitches that they're doing. And it was a really nice marriage with predictive analytics, because predictive, it's one of my favorite AI methodologies because it's so scalable and so flexible and agile. And so we started using predictive analytics at the PR agency to help the PR teams figure out timing and popularity of certain topics, of when they should be pitching, when they should be running campaigns. And, you know, that was always the question of what's going to happen, when should I do the thing? And that was where this methodology came in really, really nicely. So I ran the marketing technology team at the PR agency. So we were, the agency was one of our clients. And so we would serve and work with the other teams to help them figure out what those schedules should look like.
So let's dive in a little bit to what predictive analytics is. And you mentioned also AI and so on, and even just alluded to it a little bit regarding helping you, the PR group with timing. Can you share with us what predictive analytics is?
Absolutely. So predictive analytics, it's essentially a math formula. The way that we use predictive is based on an S-AREMA model. So that's an autoregressive integrated moving averages with seasonality. The best way to think about it is think about it like a Google map. So if you are trying to get from point A to point B, that information is updating live based on historical information, how long it took other people taking that same route to get from A to B. Then you have to factor in things like, is there traffic that day? How fast are you driving that day? Is there suddenly an accident while you are in the middle of driving from A to B? And all of those factors are going to start to change the formula of how long it's going to take you to get from A to B. And then if you factor in seasonality, so I live in New England and weather is always a factor with our drive. So we might have a random snowstorm or torrential downpours or, you know, sunbursts or whatever the thing is, that's also going to affect how long it takes to get you from A to B. So historical data is one piece of it. Then you have to factor in the real time pieces of it. So that's the basics of how a predictive forecast in this context works. It's called a time series model. And what it does is it uses numerical data that you have historically and projects it forward to try to find the trends and timing of certain things. So you can use your own data, such as your own Google Analytics data. You can use your financial data. You can use your CRM data, anything that you have that's numeric and complete, and project it forward to start to see trends. And it's not something that is going to replace what you already know. It's just going to support what you already know.
So let's peel this back a little bit in a few different ways. So one is like the difference between, say, analytics as marketers and business owners already know, we're familiar with something like Google Analytics and other analytics suites. And in most cases, those are looking like sort of in the rearview mirror. Those are looking at things that have already happened. The difference here we're talking about is how to get an idea of what's in the through the front of the vehicle and getting a gist of what might be coming down the road. And oftentimes you use the analogy of like a GPS, for instance, or a Google Maps data, because in that particular case, sure, once you sort of get closer in proximity to those elements on the map, they may look a little bit different, or some things may be slightly different there that you can react to. But for the most part, you have an idea when you start mapping something like that out of the obstacles ahead, or at least the sort of the terrain moving forward. So predictive analytics gives folks that opportunity to not to the exact T, but in a much better way, had they just not paid any attention to any of this at all, forecast, as you were saying, what that terrain looks like ahead when it comes to business decisions, right?
That's exactly it. And a car is a really great analogy for the issues that marketers face with reporting in general. And so, you know, you wouldn't drive a car by only looking in the rearview mirror. You wanted to look ahead of what's coming up in front of you. It's the same thing. And using a predictive forecast is that looking forward instead of you can't change what's already happened. So then you're only ever reacting to the data that you're seeing, where as with a predictive forecast, you can be a little bit more proactive and start to plan things and feel like you're not constantly behind that eight ball of, well, all of these things happened and we didn't know until it's too late. This helps you get out ahead a little bit more.
Now, you also talked about some of the data sets a little bit. You alluded to some of the historical data. I think there's like two scenarios here. There's one where people actually have historical data to use, and then there may be another scenario where somebody's sort of starting off fresh, a new business or something like that. How much data do you need to feel that you could trust what you're looking at in any shape or form? And how does somebody who maybe has, who's starting off fresh, get into it? How do they, is it sort of lost on them until they build up some historical data?
You know, it's an interesting question because it always comes down to, it depends. So it depends on what it is you're trying to understand. It depends on how far ahead you're trying to forecast. And so if you're trying to forecast out only 90 days, you might only need about 6 months worth of really good data. My company is only actually about 2.5 years old. And so for the first year, we didn't have enough of our own data to run a predictive forecast. And so we actually relied a lot on third-party data. And a really good free data source is Google Trends. You can connect an API up to Google Trends, and it's search data. So keywords, phrases that consumers are searching on, and you can look at it globally. You can look at it more regionally. You can look at it, I think it goes all the way back to 2004. And so it's a really robust third-party data set that, you know, all marketers could and should be looking at. And so it's Google search. I think it's Google shopping, YouTube search. I forget what the other two are, but there's a lot of really good data in there. You can use the Bureau of Labor Statistics if you're trying to answer a question about employment. There's a lot of free financial data out there. So there's a lot of different third-party data sources that you can use if you don't have enough of your own data. Now, that said, a lot of companies don't even realize what kind of data they might have access to, and that's a whole other, you know, it's a bit of a silo issue. But if you have access to your financial data or your CRM data, or your marketing automation data, email opens, for example, your Google Analytics or Omniture data. So all of those numerical data sets are really great to run a predictive forecast on. I actually did a talk a couple of years ago at Inbound where I walked through, I think, all 7 or 8 phases of the customer experience, the buyer's journey and the owner's journey, and gave examples of how you can use a predictive forecast at every single stage.
What are the most common use cases these days for predictive analytics?
In the marketing space, the most common use cases that I see are for content marketing. So planning out your content writing. You know, it's one of those things that it takes a little while to plan it, to figure it out. And there's so much content that gets produced and published on a daily basis that you want to make sure that you're doing the right content at the right time that your audience cares about. So when we show examples of scalable predictive forecasts, we usually show our basic content calendar, which is the keywords that we want to be found and known for. So things like Google Analytics, Data Studio, Data Science, Business Analytics. And what we've done is we've used Google Trends data to project forward when people will be searching for those terms so that we know, okay, the week of July 1st, people are looking for business analytics. If it's only June, then that means we can record a podcast, make some videos, write a blog, put it in the newsletter. And then that information is already out there indexed by Google search engine. So then come July, we can then use that same predictive forecast and say, okay, this is the week that I want to run a campaign behind this thing because it's the right keyword. So I know where to spend my money. And so it has a lot of really good use and implication for how you can be planning ahead. Content marketing is probably one of the more common use cases.
So that's super interesting. So what I heard you talk about was understanding how to get ahead potentially whether it be because of seasonality, because of trends of information, but make sure that your content can be essentially published with the right timing to be indexed by Google. Now it's available when some when the tide starts turning, or when there's an upswell of people looking for that content, and then you also have the opportunity from there continue to publish new content or be having those discussions on even social and that sort of thing, because you understood when the right time to get ahead, produce that, and again from the SEO perspective, if it takes you by the time you end up putting content out there. It's somewhat unpredictable about how long it'll end up taking to get indexed properly and eventually get ranked in a great way. If they're, the competition isn't paying attention to this, they're not doing anything predictively to get ahead of this. And you are, you have a huge competitive advantage for getting your content out there when the noise, or when the competition, excuse me, is low or non-existent at that point. You have a much higher chance of being highly ranked when people start becoming interested in it, right?
That's exactly it. And you know, you had mentioned the SEO piece of it. If you want to take it that next step, you can do your SEO analysis and figure out what are the keywords that your competitors are ranking for, but then what are the opportunities of keywords that nobody's really going after, and then use those keywords, run your predictive forecast, and then create content around those keywords that, you know, you want to start to own and take over. Or you can sort of do the other side of it, where you are trying to actively take away from your competitors those particular keywords. There's a lot of different ways to think about it, and it fits nicely with other pieces of your digital marketing strategy. So it fits with SEO, it fits with paid campaigns, it fits with email marketing, it fits with, you know, organic and paid search, all of those different elements. It can really inform all of your planning.
That can be one of the hardest things to do, is to have some level of confidence when you see a particular space, a particular conversation that you want to own, or you want to be, you know, highly visible in, but there's little content already out there from anybody, from competitors or any, you know, analysts or anything, to be able to produce that content and feel like the time spent and the energy spent and the money spent is going to be worthwhile, because you're sort of making a guess at that point that, like, hey, I think that this is a particular term or space that's emerging at the moment that I would like to be a part of. It sounds a lot like predictive analytics would provide. Again, I think all of this is not saying that you were able to tell the future in crystal clarity, but it's definitely much more informative about how things, what's going to happen here in the near future, to help you make better and more informed decisions and instill some level of confidence.
And that's exactly it. And, you know, you had originally started by asking me about how it played in with PR. So think about a pitching calendar. You know, journalists are getting pitched topics all the time. And so wouldn't it be nice if you could zero in a little bit more on when they're going to care about certain topics? And again, it takes a little bit of work, finesse, you know, trial and error. You know, you had mentioned that these predictive forecasts, they're not a crystal ball. And I always like to make sure that people have some of the disclaimers and caveats about predictive, especially right now where, you know, we are in the middle of a global pandemic. We have a lot of other crisis type things going on. The data is only as good as the integrity. So anything after March 1st of 2020 is likely going to be kind of hijacked by the pandemic. And so using that data, especially third party data right now, is probably not going to give you really great, you know, results that you can take action on. An example of that is the unemployment rate. So, you know, it all of a sudden it was like sort of humming along at a plateau and then immediately spiked up at this really, really high point. That's an anomaly in the data. And yes, you can use that data to run a predictive forecast, but you have to be aware of those anomalies in the data. If you're using your own data, your own historical data to run a predictive forecast, I would recommend using the full year of 2019, provided it's complete and clean, and using that to project forward to start to understand trends. Because again, anything after March 1st, you're going to have a lot of anomalies. If you're in a space that, you know, travel this travel space, for instance, all travel came to a screeching halt, and you're not going to have really good data to use to project forward. What should I do coming out of the pandemic if you're using data from that time period? So use maybe data that's a little bit older to start to understand it. So there are some caveats around using a predictive forecast, especially when you're in the middle of some kind of a crisis.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you more about that, like considering how fast things are moving just because of technology and other stuff. I mean, we have just in general, things are moving fast where I had a conversation recently with somebody for the podcast. We were talking about how in the past, so many businesses looked at things from a much longer sort of lens. They were looking at it with this, you know, not Hubble telescope, but they were for sure looking at it from a few years out in a really, you know, long way. And now things are moving so fast that that's become less useful, let alone less realistic. And so considering that that's the normal state of things, or at least has been over the last couple of years, and then we have COVID, we have protests, we have economical issues and all that. How far out would somebody normally want to, I would say, how far out should we depend on predictive analytics before it feels that before it becomes unreliable in sort of both of those scenarios? Is there, for the folks that are listening right now who are dealing with either a current COVID or slightly post-COVID, you know, time, is it a wash for them until another couple years of data comes out? How would you look at that?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's a wash. So, you know, we use a 52-week calendar when we do our initial planning. And so we look at our historical data from the years previous. I would say companies can still do that because, you know, if you have two good years worth of data, 2018 and 2019, then you can use that information to project out, here's what the year should have looked like, and then start to make adjustments from there. When you're using it in day-to-day, I recommend no more than really 90 days at a time and then rerunning the projection because, to your point, things are changing so quickly. You know, job turnovers like hirings and layoffs and furloughs and, you know, think about your emails, your email newsletters, for example. People are leaving and coming onto jobs so quickly that the readership base of your newsletter is changing over. So open rates are going to be changing, you know, subscriber rates are going to be changing. All of those things are in flux so much faster than they normally are that if you try to project out too far, you're not going to have very reliable data. So I would say you can use a full year, 52-week projection to sort of do that initial planning. But in the practicality, probably, you know, either 30, 60 or 90 day increments and then rerunning it depending on, you know, what kind of resources you have to actually execute some of these plans.
I love that. Perfect. And so you've had a history of being a musician for a long, long time. Since second grade all the way through high school, you were a musician. So obviously music is at a core, you know, a big part of you. Do you think that there are some similarities between music and analytics in some sort of way that's what's made you gravitate in that direction, just from, you know, structure or how you see it in your brain? Or because you didn't just play like percussion, you played also wind instruments and so on. So you've dabbled in instruments that are different. And I know enough about you to know that you also have a pretty eclectic or widespread interest in music genre. So you like music and you like a lot of different things and different structures and different instruments. So is there a particular way that your brain works that's helped you sort of gravitate and grok the analytical part of things?
You know, it's interesting. I think that it comes down to staying open and really listening. So like when you play a musical instrument, if you're just by yourself as a solo artist, you don't have to pay attention to any of the noise around you. It's just you. But I've always, when I was playing music, I was always part of a larger ensemble or a band. When I played the bass guitar in the jazz band, I was the driving beat to keep things moving forward. And so I think, you know, if I were to draw the parallel, I think that I've always been someone who really tries to pay attention and listen to not just what I'm doing, but everything else around it that influences it. And I think analytics is the same way, because if you get stuck in that one lane of, I'm going to look at the traffic to my website, has it gone up, has it gone down? That's great, but what can you do about it? And do you have a good understanding of the outside things that are influencing that information? And, you know, discovering new music, playing music, listening to music, that all involves, you know, staying open and, you know, listening to outside influences. One of my favorite things to do is, especially with newer music, is to try to figure out, is it sampling older music and what is it referencing and what does it sound like and where did that beat come from? And I feel like with analytics, you could start to kind of do the same thing of, well, where did that come from? Why is it like that? What is influencing it? You know, what is driving that beat forward in that certain way? Because nothing happens in a vacuum. It all has to be influenced by something.
I really, really love that. So what I'm hearing you say is, at some point when you first started with music, there was an innate curiosity that made you go, okay, what I'm playing now had influence elsewhere. It's connected to something else in say music history, maybe even in another genre, because a lot of things are very much connected, right? And so you understood that, or at least you had that curiosity when you were younger, which caused you sort of to follow down that particular path, be open to doing so, learn about another genre, maybe become more interested in another instrument because of that. And the snowball kept building, and that's what got you interested in all these different genres of music, let alone playing the different instruments. And you feel that same sort of innate curiosity, but also ability to recognize that there are bigger influences at play, that's really the connection you're making.
That's exactly it. You know, I like to joke that one of my favorite things about horror movies, for example, is the backstory. How did this villain, this supernatural creature, come to be? And I really dig hard to try to figure out how it makes sense. And I've gone down, like, you know, deep rabbit holes of trying to figure out how, you know, Jason from Friday the 13th can keep coming back. Like, what supernatural force created him so that he's immortal? And I feel like it's that curiosity that I've applied to music, that I've also applied to data and analytics of, I need to know why. I need to know how this works, how this fits together. Tell me how I got from A to B. I don't like not knowing. And I think that that curiosity is really what has helped me sort of say, okay, well, I like the predictive forecast. It helps me sort of get a direction, but then it also, for me personally, forces me to kind of go backwards. Like, why is it coming out like that? And so I'm sort of like swinging the pendulum of, like, I need to know historically so that I can look forward. I need to know forward so I can look historically. And it's sort of like this loop that I kind of like, I keep moving forward and then move back a little, move forward, move back a little, so that I can really understand it. Because I need to know. I don't like having any stone unturned.
I think that's one of the things that people most often miss in marketing, is connecting the dots. And I think that that's often why customer experience ends up being customer journey, those things end up being a hard thing for marketers to grok a lot of times, because it means filling in the gaps of things that don't have readily apparent connections. It means sort of uncovering things and understanding things. And so empathy plays a big part, obviously, in that, but having actual conversations and understanding the human beings that you're doing business with, because we're so busy looking at web traffic, the interaction somebody's made on our app or our site, and then ultimately whether there's a conversion, and then we're not paying attention to all the other things that are involved with that. And those outside influences, sort of part of what you're talking about, is, you know, the third party and big data sources tell us a lot about not stuff that happens obviously on our website, but these outside these outside forces, or at a minimum, shares with us data about what has been historically, what's been the historical behavior of that customer in a way as well, and helps us connect those dots to the things that that we most often, like you said, look at in a very narrow lens and should probably open up a little bit more to look at otherwise.
A really good example of that is, you know, purchasing data. So right now, in the middle of a pandemic, purchasing data is going to be really skewed because everybody at the beginning of the pandemic was hoarding toilet paper and flour and, you know, baking supplies and whatever else it was that they felt that they needed in order to be locked in their houses. And so if you only ever looked at that purchasing data and nothing else outside of it, you'd probably be like, huh, that's really weird. Why did suddenly people start buying up all of the flour off the shelves and nothing else? You have to look at those outside influences to be like, oh, well, people were staying home and they were bored and they wanted to teach themselves to bake and they had children to feed and they needed a hobby and there was a pandemic so they couldn't leave and there was this and there was that. And so no one single data source alone is going to tell you the full story. You know, I guess the other thing about predictive that I probably should say is that a lot of times what I see is that marketers want to jump immediately to a predictive forecast. But to your point, you have to have those foundational pieces. So you have to have the quantitative data, which is what happened. So that's your Google Analytics, that's your CRM data, your financials. But then you have to have your qualitative data. Why did it happen? Why did someone make the choice that they made? And those are talking to your customers, finding out, you know, why they left you as a customer or what they like about your experience, what they don't like, their preferences, those kinds of things. Those two pieces have to be in place first before you try to run a predictive forecast. Otherwise, your predictive forecast isn't really going to give you a lot of rich information, and or you won't be able to take the kind of action that's meaningful because you still don't really know a whole lot about your customers. You're then just looking at those single streams of data that don't really tell you a whole lot.
We're sort of alluding to this a little bit here through the conversation, but what are the, once you get the, people do this a lot right now with analytics. We face it a lot with our customers when they're looking at their analytics, is they look at sort of the default reports that are there. They just look at the data for what it is, and then they sort of make a decision. I think that that ends up being only a third of the sort of work that needs to be done. Beyond that, mm-hmm. there's a way of thinking and looking at the data. And again, some of what you're talking about in regards to when you're looking at that data and understanding, like, if I were to look at the toilet paper buying trends of this year, I might think that next year I need to do something really tremendous with our toilet paper campaign because it's going to happen again around the same time without sort of thinking about it a little bit. When somebody's looking at that information, what kind of mindset should they have as they're looking at that data? Because doing the mechanics of putting it together, deciding where you're going to get the data sources from, blah, 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 and then running it, it's one thing. But now that you have it in front of you, it's up to us in how we, you know, contextualize that data as we look at it, right?
It's interesting. And I've been guilty of this. I still am guilty of this a lot, is we often jump to the output, but we don't stop to first say, what is the question I'm trying to answer? What's the problem I'm trying to solve? And so in the toilet paper example, you know, if the question you're trying to answer is, how much toilet paper should I have stocked on my shelves week over week? Yes, the historical purchase patterns are going to tell you something, but you should be looking at other consumer behaviors. Like, was there an increase in foot traffic, or was there just one person who was continually buying up all of the toilet paper off of the shelves? You know, what were the other factors that went into it? And so it's really trying to think through a well-rounded picture of what happened, why did it happen, and then what's going to happen in the future. That's sort of the three-part basics of having that predictive forecast. The predictive is really only one part of, you know, the three parts.
For an absolute newbie, what are some of the first steps that you would recommend, or what would be the first step for folks that want to get started with predictive analytics?
I would say the first step is, you know, again, what is the question you're trying to answer? So if you have a need for running a predictive forecast, start to think through, how would I use this? What would I use it for? And that way it starts to help focus in on the type of data that you will need, because the second step is you need to have some data. You don't need to have your own data. You can have third-party data, but really having a good grasp on what the question is going to start to focus in on what you need and how you can actually execute to do something about it.
Are the tools for doing this, because I think obviously technology plays a big part as well. So are the tools for doing this, can we only use super expensive, complicated tools, or are there some things that folks can dip their toes in right now to start playing with some of that data?
There's not a great off-the-shelf predictive forecast for marketers that exist, to my knowledge. There are systems like IBM Watson, which are really expensive, but a lot of enterprise level companies tend to use software like that. If you're looking to figure out how to build your own, I would recommend looking at a programming language called R. R is an open source, free programming language. There's a lot of really great tutorials. We almost exclusively program all of our code in R. And it's...
Is that a pirate language? Is that a pirate language?
R.
Predictive analytics.
Having the Boston accent, sometimes it's difficult. So on some days when I get really tired, I'm like, so is that an app? And my partners are like, what? I'm like, nah, is that an app?
That's hilarious. And
but yes, R is our studio. You can keep all of your information in the cloud. There's a really great community, especially on GitHub, that uses R as a programming language. So if you're someone who's just starting out and you're interested in building your own, that's where I would start and make sure that you have a good grasp on how an ARIMA model works, because that is the foundation for a time series forecast. It's just a mathematical equation. That said, there are consultancies who can help you run a predictive forecast and leave you to do the work of just executing what the plan is. That's something that we at Trust Insights do. There's other folks out there who do similar things. I like to think that we're the best at it. I might be a little biased. But yeah, you can certainly start to think about how to build your own, but you have to have some basic coding skills in order to do so.
Are there any good online resources or books that you recommend? Again, I think it's smart for marketers to at least sort of get an overview of things, even if they're not... they don't have the time to code R or learn a new language like that, because obviously it, for most folks, just doing HTML these days is a whole language unto itself that people, you know, are using for their content management systems or whatever. Learning something like R is just like a whole new thing, unless they're sort of, I would say, more technologically inclined in thinking that way. Are there any resources online that are good to get a little bit more, you know, whether that be some videos or books or communities? You mentioned, you know, obviously GitHub, which is going to be a more tech-centered, developer-centered type of community. Any others that you recommend?
I can recommend our own Slack community. That's Analytics for Marketers. You can find it at trustinsights.com/analytics for marketers. We can send you an invite. But in terms of, you know, books and publications, if you're looking for maybe some certifications or just some general training, IBM, actually, a lot of their certifications and courses are free. So you can go through and just get sort of those broad strokes understanding of how a predictive forecast could work. As I mentioned, R has a lot of really great free resources and trainings on how to get started in using the programming, maybe not specifically around creating a predictive forecast, but just in using the tools. So IBM is a really great resource for the predictive forecast piece. Communities, there's a lot of Slack communities. Spiceworks, I think, has a lot of really great communities for people who are more on the technical side. There are other Slack communities for marketers specifically. So I think there's a lot of ways to get started. It really just depends on your interest. If you want to just be someone who understands it and can execute the plan, or if you actually want to get more on the technical side and learn how to code it, it really depends on which side you want, but there's great resources for both.
What is your dream predictive analytics tool look like? You said that there wasn't really like a great one. If Katie Robert was going to to design one or you know guide a company to creating one, what would that look like?
You know, it's funny. I was working on this a little bit yesterday, actually. So one of the things that I think is a really useful application is what's called a digital channel forecast. So if you look at all of your channel groupings in Google Analytics, if you have enough historical data, then you can project out, this is how my channels are likely to perform with goals and conversions. And so what I really like about that is that if you're trying to resource and put budget allocations behind, well, the email team needs this much and the social team needs this much, you can really start to understand, here's what I should be thinking about allocating budget-wise moving into the next year. You know, my ideal tool doesn't exist because I like to use it a lot of different ways. So it's the channel forecasting, it's the content, it's the financials. You know, people can look out at their own personal financials. They've probably done this and they've projected forward. I have this many paychecks coming in, therefore I know how much money I'm going to have. That's a very back of the envelope version of predictive forecasting. Then that's essentially what we're doing in a more technical way. And so I guess my dream tool would be easy to use. You could look at it and go, okay, I know what I need to be doing next week. I know the type of content I need to create. I know when to send an email. I know when to put money behind this thing. And so it's a forecast that really helps you plan out all of your digital channels in a thoughtful way.
I had one more question, but I just before that, actually, I realized that I forgot to ask you. So you mentioned AI briefly. Yes. What role is AI? Is AI playing a big role at the moment? I know that there are a number of predictive analytics and generally analytics companies that are leveraging AI for recognizing blips in the data, recognizing incidents, recognizing opportunities, and you know making recommendations, let alone probably in the future executing on a lot of things on your behalf based on that data. What's your experience or thoughts about AI's role in predictive analytics?
I mean, it's huge. So the type of predictive forecast that we run is powered by machine learning, and machine learning is a type of artificial intelligence. And so it's all very closely nested together. One of the things that we can also do with artificial intelligence is if you do happen to have a data set that's missing data, there are certain techniques that can infer what that missing data might be and start to fill in the blanks. Exactly. So it's never going to be a perfect data set, but it starts to get you closer to having a more complete data set that you can then use to run a predictive forecast. And so, you know, it relies on third-party data, it relies on historical information, but it's a type of artificial intelligence that allows you to have that more complete data. The artificial intelligence, you can program it to look for those anomalies. You can program it to look for the seasonality. So the retail space is a really good example. So, you know, summer might be slower, but starting in, you know, September, October, you should probably be planning out all of your Christmas and holiday campaigns. So you can start to include that kind of information in your artificial intelligence training data sets to say, this is seasonality. This is what it looks like. Look for this kind of information.
So this is the most important question, and we'll end it with this question. So we alluded to the fact that we talked about the fact that you played multiple instruments since since second grade. What was your favorite instrument to play, and why?
I spent the most time playing the bass guitar, but probably my favorite instrument was the bass drum, because it was loud, it was fun, and it was very satisfying, like when you have this big giant mallet and you just hit it against the drum. When I was in the drum line in high school, I was the smallest in the drum line, and yet I had the biggest bass drum. So when we had to march in parades, you sort of saw this mismatch of the tallest guy had the smallest drum and the smallest person had the biggest drum, but it made such a nice loud noise. Like, I think that's probably why. And then when we played at the football games, you know, you'd have the drums like in the stands, and it was just a lot of fun, and it was really difficult to do wrong.
I spent many years actually learning and playing taiko drums, the big Japanese drums made mm-hmm. out of like wine barrels. So yep. I can totally relate to that feeling of just hitting a nice big drum and feeling that reverberation of the mm-hmm. beat and the bass and so on. So I totally get it. What's your favorite genre to play?
Oh man. Probably punk or ska, because it was just it. I think because as I was learning music, I was sort of raised on like jazz music, and ska has a lot of jazz influence. So we're talking about influence, and so like they had the horn section, and it tended to be like more upbeat and fun. And so like there was always really good driving bass lines, and the same with punk music. If you listen to a lot of punk, the bass line is so complicated, but the rest of the music tends to be so simple and just loud and distorted. But I always found, especially like Rancid, for example, they always had really phenomenal bass lines driving through every song that I was like, oh, this is just so cool. And I love it. And I think I just really like that lower tone percussive sounding music.
And so I was going to say, which song was your favorite to play? And it sounds like you're talking about.
That's a tough question.
You didn't know that I was going to take you to task here about the music stuff, huh?
You know, I'll be honest. Like I think if I was, if I'm thinking back to like high school, like the playing at the football games, I think it was Sunshine of Your Love. And I would play the bass drum in the stands for that one. I can't remember off the top of my head, like what some of my favorite songs to play on the bass were. When I was learning bass, I was learning a lot of like Megadeth and Metallica and, you know, stuff like that. But it's been a minute. I'll just leave it there.
All right. I'm going to look forward to seeing you either on that bass drum or guitar or something here in the near future. You know, once we start going back out again, you're in Boston. Maybe I'll see you over at Inbound or something like that. And we'll get you on stage with a guitar or something. All right.
Maybe that's how I can attract a new crowd, is I can promise to do a talk on predictive forecast while I play the upright bass.
Oh, that'd be awesome. You'd be like, you know, predictive analytics is this, you know,
right,
I don't even know if that's a riff for an upright bass. You see me?
Probably. I played the concert upright bass, and that sounds about right.
Well, I'm so, so happy that, our friend Jenny introduced us, and, I love your connection to analytics and music. Ramon, my colleague, music is a big part of his life. And when I heard you say jazz and all that, I'm sure he'd love to have an extended conversation with you about that, because he's totally a connoisseur of all things music and jazz especially. Where can folks find out more about you, stay connected with you, that sort of thing?
They can find me in the business at trustinsights.ai. They can find out more about me personally on Twitter and LinkedIn. I am at Katie Robert, which is Robert with two B's. And so, yeah, I'm not huge on social media, but I am around.
Well, that's great. Again, I appreciate the time that you spent, and I hope to bring you back so we can talk a little bit more later.
Sounds fun. I can't wait.
Woohoo! You made it to the end of the podcast. Awesome. Well, thank you for spending time with me and the Marketing in the Raw podcast. Again, my name is Adam Helway, and I am just going to continue to work hard at getting more and more of these shows out to you. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe. And if you've already subscribed, you are incredible, and I love you. And if you haven't, you should be ashamed of yourself. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to guilt you into subscribing, but it would be awesome if you would. And if you've already subscribed, then please leave us a review and a rating wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. That helps so many other people find us. And then last but not least, if you'd like to talk about marketing, if you need help with anything you got going on, or just simply want to connect, you can go ahead and email me at adam@secretsushi.com, or you could just go to secretsushi.com and check out what we're doing. Okay? Take care.